faith, spiritual values, moral issues, government, economy, education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
All right, welcome. Glad you are with us. All right, we're going to have on with us here in just 1 minute Bill Federer to talk about Pearl Harbor. Today is the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Talk about what really happened that day, leading up to it, and the history of it, and of course, honoring those who perished there. Before we do, let me go over real quick to worldviewreport.com. There's an interesting article over there. It's called Coming Soon, Climate Lockdowns, and the 15-Minute City. That's pretty interesting. I saw it over on technocracy.news, the website of Patrick Wood. And look what you got here. For those watching by television, by radio, let me explain. This is right from the World Economic Forum's own website. This is their own website, and it is a drawing of your home in the center of the circle. It's basically a circle. And there's your home in the center of the circle. And then they have these various paths. And from the circle, you can go out 15 minutes. So your home is in the center of the circle. And then 15 minutes, you're allowed to go out. So 15 minutes from work. Now, this is all by foot. This is all by walking or by bike. 15 minutes to work. The other direction, you got 15 minutes to healthy eating. Of course, they're going to decide what it is you can eat. I guess that's where you go and get your cricket chips and cockroach milk. And to those of you, again, if you're new and you think I'm joking, I'm not joking. That is exactly what's going on. Then you see you have a 15-minute trip to go to your doctor. You have a 15-minute trip from the center to go and enjoy some outdoor activities at a local park or green space. So they've got it all planned for you, folks. 15 minutes. 15 minutes. You say, oh, well, they're not going to be able to get me to agree to that. Well, under a digital economy, absolutely. Because nothing will work outside of this 15-minute little ghetto. They're going to put you into an environmental World Economic Forum ghetto. Just like they put the Jews in a ghetto. And they gave them a little star on their yellow star on their coat or their clothing, right? Well, this is really the same worldview. And we've tried to explain that to you guys when we interviewed and have interviewed extensively Mark Musser, Dr. Mark Musser, who wrote the book Nazi Ecology. Much of what Adolf Hitler was doing was the green agenda. Folks, when he invaded Poland, killed all the Jews, and turned a lot of that into green space, into parks, into preserves, the animal rights laws. Oh, yeah. How many Jews can you fit onto a boxcar? One more. But at the same time, one of the first laws he passed was animal rights laws about how many animals you could put on a boxcar. Please understand, friends, some of these locomotive engines, these trains, these engines were pulling boxcars that were crammed with Jews who were suffocating because of the number of Jews pushed into there, while a boxcar behind them or in front of them was filled with animals that were spaced out according to law. You can only put so many animals on a boxcar. You couldn't be cruel to the animals, but you could be cruel to the Jews because the Jews were lower than the animals. In fact, all humans to them were lower than the animals because they had taken nature and they had turned it upside down. And as I've told you before, they saw nature as being served by man. Man was to serve nature, for nature came before man. Matter preceded the mind. Matter preceded the mind. So matter is higher on the evolutionary chart than man. It is from the animals, they teach, that man came about. Man evolved. So man is really, in many regards, they would say, an animal. Evolved from an animal. Random chance. No perfect meaning, just random. There's no God. There's no creator. There's no moral law. There's no moral lawgiver. It's, as one has said, the power of the tooth and the claw. It's survival of the fittest. It's might makes right. But nature was to be served by man versus nature serving man. And you go read his book, Nazi Ecology, and you learn real fast by Dr. Mark Musser, what Hitler was doing was a green agenda, and Hitler was offering up the Jews as a sacrifice, almost a Babylonian sacrifice to nature. Hitler, it's reported, documented, that he wrote about sacrifices under the oak trees when he was a young man. And he was apparently obsessed with the idea of oak trees and giving out oak, things, to put on your head, wreaths, during the Olympics that he hosted, giving out saplings. Some of them made their way back to the U.S. Oak doors that the Jews would go through to go into the gas chambers or to be murdered. Oak trees lining Auschwitz. Mark Musser shows the pictures, goes into great detail in all this. There seemed to be a lot of symbolism. Isn't that interesting? Isn't there a lot of symbolism today? There's an awful lot of symbolism today. We just looked at the opening of the games there in Great Britain this last summer. And what did they have? All that symbolism. People holding crystals, using a crystal to tame a beast, a wild beast that comes into the stadium. Remember that? Like a woman riding the beast. And then the woman that had the crystal that tamed the beast, if you continue watching that video, she ends up on top of the beast. So there she is riding the beast. The Tower of Babel and all the nations coming out of the Tower of Babel and dancing around it. And then you have the people coming up out of the water, out of the moat around the Tower of Babel, coming up out of the sea. It was just rich, thick with symbolism. They're either mocking us because they know we're going to pick up on it, or they're that both demonically inspired that they're mocking God. They're mocking God. They're mocking Christians. You saw this in this opening of this tunnel. Where was the opening of that tunnel, Logan? Was that in Switzerland somewhere? And we showed that video on TV. And you had people walking around with a goat's head. All kinds of satanic, androgynous. You didn't know if you're looking at males or females. That was the whole idea. All of this occultic symbolism in the opening of this tunnel for this bullet train. Now, don't think that these people don't know what they're doing. Well, Hitler was into this whole idea of symbolism as well. So don't think that what Hitler was doing can't be repeated. It will just be done cleaner, neater, more organized. Can you imagine if Hitler had all the technology we have today? You should go and read the book by Edwin Black, IBM and the Holocaust. IBM and the Holocaust. The book's really thick, almost like probably 5 inches thick. IBM and the Holocaust. And take a look at how they were using the machines and the punch cards to keep track of the Jews and their heritage and their lineage and the numbers tied onto the ink on their arms. You should read it, IBM and the Holocaust. Can you imagine what Hitler would do with the technology available today? Well, this is it, folks. This is it. Going back to the graphic, World Economic Forum, folks, has it right on their own website. I mean, if you doubt me, let's do this. Look, it says, a cartoon above from the World Economic Forum. And okay, that's a hyperlink. I'm going to click to it. And look at that. Takes us right to the World Economic Forum. We scroll down the page, and there's the graphic I've been explaining to you. Now, outside of your circle, your home being at the center of the circle for you, you say, you're not going to get me to do that, be a part of that. Well, your digital currency won't work outside of that. And this, you know, is now being recognized by my people like myself, conservatives, as well as people who are more progressive, that's for sure. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., when I interviewed him, talked about this very idea. Digital dollars, digital currency, you won't be able to go outside of a certain area. So conservative Brennan House realizes that. More progressive in some areas, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. realizes that. Once progressive, and certainly maybe progressive still in some areas, Naomi Wolf realizes that. Once Democrat, now independent, Steve Kirsch realizes that. This isn't a right-left thing. People are waking up. So there's an article over at worldviewreport.com that you might find very interesting. The idea of lockdowns, folks. The idea of lockdowns are going to be used to get us used to this idea of being ghettoed. Oxford City Council is moving faster than the rest. So this is going to go on. This is quite interesting if you read the whole article. Let me just read a little bit of it before I go to Bill Federer. The green agenda is taking inspiration from the illiberal days of lockdown. To this end, Oxfordshire County Council, which is run by Labour, the Liberal Democrats, and the Green Party, wants to divide the city of Oxford into six 15-minute districts. In these districts, it is said most household essentials will be accessible by a quarter of an hour walk or bike ride. So 15-minute walk or bike ride. And so residents will have no need for a car. On the surface, these 15-minute neighborhoods might sound pleasant and convenient, but there is a coercive edge. The council plans to cut car use and traffic congestion by placing strict rules on car journeys. Folks, they're already talking about outlawing the car, the fossil fuel cars in California, what, by 2030? Is that what they're saying? 2030? Is it 2035? Somewhere in there. And this is growing. This is growing. Don't think this can't happen. And before that, you're going to start seeing certain cities passing that on Sundays, you can't drive cars in this area. On Sundays, you can't drive any cars in Milwaukee. In the city of Milwaukee, on Sundays, no cars. You know, I'm not saying that's what there's. I'm just using Milwaukee as an example. But don't be shocked. This is already being discussed to condition people. And so this is already being looked at. The concept of the 15-minute city was born with C40, chaired today by London Mayor Khan. C40 calls itself a network of mayors of nearly 100 world-leading cities collaborating to deliver the urgent action needed right now to confront the climate crisis. They've conditioned us with lockdowns. They're pushing the propaganda. And pretty soon they're going to lock you into 15-minute cities. We come back, I'll tell you what's happening in Brazil and something very scary in California. Then Bill Federer. Don't go away. right, before we go to Bill Federer on Pearl Harbor, that today is December 7th, I want to point you to WVWTV.com and hope that you'll go and watch. There's so much happening in the world, folks. I can't get it all in to any one shows. And even with the 4 hours a day I'm doing, I'm not getting it all in. But here's an interview I did last night, which all of you should watch at some point. I'm going to get him back on for extended period. He was on 60 Minutes. He's good friends. He was good friends with Peter Pry. He's good friends with David Tice. He's former military, but he was on 60 Minutes the other night. They reran it about the power grid and the tax on our power grid, which is interesting because we just had one in North Carolina. And as of last night, as of this morning, many of those people are still without power. Here's my question. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry pontificated that the attack on the power grids, the physical attack, someone shooting out the coolant system, causing the oil to leak out, have the substation overheat, in 2013 in California, that was a coordinated attack. The head of FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission at the time, brought over the Navy SEALs to look at it, and they said, look, this was a special forces team of some kind. They have pre-positioned rock piles to know where to stand at night to make their shots. They were in and out in under 20 minutes. They knew where the cameras were. They avoided being seen on the cameras, and they got out. They also cut the 9/11 cable, so that delayed anything. And Dr. Peter Pry sat at this desk and warned that he believed that was Iran. Iran was warning America, we're here, we're among you, and Silicon Valley, which was served by that area, we know you worked with America, with Israel, for Stuxnet, which is a virus they put on thumb drives and spread throughout the Middle East in hopes they would make it into the Iranian nuclear program, and they did, and spun up their centrifuges and did a bunch of damage. Dr. Pry believes that was a warning. Stop it, or we can bring down your whole power grid. Now, I don't know who did the damage over in North Carolina. There's a lot of military based over there in that particular area, some special forces, I understand. I don't know what that was all about, and they're not really telling us yet, are they? I'm just going to throw out a theory. Just a theory. A possible theory. Till we know otherwise, why not throw out theories and ideas? Here's one. What if that was, again, Iran warning America? Now, there is in the international press reports that Israel and America are practicing military strikes on Iran. I mean, you go look it up. There are reports of Israel and America rehearsing a strike on Iran. I don't know if it'll ever come to pass. I certainly don't think this government has the guts to do it unless they're just trying to get us into a war so they can bring down America. Then they would. I'm not convinced that Benjamin Netanyahu has the guts to do it. I like Benjamin, but sometimes I think he maybe is full of hot air. So, I'm getting a little tired of these people always warning and talking about their red lines, and they just let things keep going and going and going and going. Now, granted, they're doing some things we don't know about. Their Mossad is taking out scientists and dealing with the problem. Even in Iran, people end up dead. So they are doing more than we know about. But it does seem as though they're spending an awful lot of time in Israel coming up with ways to kill people with a COVID shot and push the green passports or the COVID passports and do all kinds of stuff that will fit right in with the Antichrist, which, of course, is not shocking because they're going to be the ones that sign a treaty with him. And, of course, that doesn't cause us to have anti-Semitism. It just causes us to understand they are people that are in unbelief right now, and we're just going to keep watching and being patient. But they seem to be sometimes more interested in being politically correct than they are worrying about what they should. So I don't know if Benjamin Netanyahu will actually have the courage to go through with it. But I don't know if this is all show, if it's theater. I have no idea. But reports are Israel and America are practicing strike on Iran. Well, maybe this again is Iran's way of saying, America, we're warning you again. All they got to do is take down. Now, the one guy came out publicly and said under 20. We were told last night that a briefing that came out that's been declassified, it's now 9. If they were to take down the right 9 substations in America, and there are over 50,000 of these things, you drive by them every day, you just don't pay attention to them. And they've got chain link fences around them at best, no one guarding them. And if you take down the right 9, you're bringing down the whole grid. So you should watch that last night. That's at WVWTV.com. You should also watch this one. Brannon, an attorney from Brazil, reports on latest developments, including possible military action this weekend. Now, Eloise is an attorney in Brazil. She has to be very careful when I interview her because she could be arrested. She could be charged civilly. She could even be charged criminally. My friend Alan DeSantos cannot go back there. He'd be arrested if he went back. He was very, very, very popular conservative broadcaster in Brazil, fled in 2020, cannot go back. Now, what I am hearing from some of these sources, not from Eloise, but because I don't want to say anything to act like she's giving it to me and put her at risk, because she's not saying this. Sources outside of Brazil that are contacting people in Brazil. They were going to certify the election of Lula, the Supreme Court there, by the 12th of December. They moved it up. Now we're hearing the 10th, and as of last night, we're hearing the 9th. We're now hearing reports that the military and special forces are now taking out, arresting, and in some cases, killing major cartel leaders. Now, that's very interesting because we are being told that some of the people that would be coming to power have a working relationship with the cartels. So by taking out a bunch of these cartel leaders or arresting them now, I think they're hoping to tamp down the violence and the terrorism that some of the cartels and these groups would be involved in. I'm just speculating. That makes common sense, right? But reportedly, these cartel figures are being arrested and some of them killed. The military, we've got video of them moving equipment and the people cheering them. The people cheering them. Now, what we're hearing is the military is telling people in these crowds, huge crowds in Rio de Janeiro and other places, stay calm, stay calm. If Bolsonaro and some of those generals are going to, and I guess they've just released a report on voter fraud, and you have a major Indian, you know, like we have American Indians. Well, they have Indians in Brazil, too, with the headdress and the whole nine yards. I played video of that last night, and he's saying before their Congress there was voter fraud, it was in the country, and it was done internationally. And I think our CIA was involved. I went into that last night. I will not go into that tonight or today. But he says, if there wasn't fraud, why not open up the machines and show us the source code? Who else is saying that? Oh, yeah, Mike Lindell. If there's not fraud, why not open up the machines, even in a closed hearing, and show us the source code and let us all look at it in a closed hearing? Here's this Indian leader saying the same thing. So they seem to have proof that this election was stolen in Brazil. If the military generals decide to back Bolsonaro, not allow for a communist revolution, that will be coming in the next couple of days because they're rushing to have Lula installed by now, not the 12th, not the 10th, we're told the 9th. So that the 9th is Friday. So we may be seeing something happen very quickly. Saturday's the 10th. We'll keep you posted. Then finally, this one you have to watch. This is at WVWTV.com. Attorney exposes with facts what she calls COVID concentration camp being built in California by railroad. Now, Nicole Pearson, the interview is, I don't even remember how long it is. I'm just going to guess. Well, no, I'll just look it up, tell you how long it is. The interview is 33 minutes, almost 34 minutes, all right? She's an attorney. She testifies before the House and Senate in California. She's filing lawsuits left and right. She had the paperwork. This is highly documented. Millions and millions of dollars to build what she, this attorney, calls COVID concentration camp by a railroad in California. And it's just one. That's just one. And they want it done by 2024. Huh. What are these people planning? And what are they planning by around the election time of 2024? You've got to watch it. Because I didn't know what she was going to say. And as she was describing it, and then it's by a rail car, railroad, I said, wait a minute. It's by a railroad, and they're building it. What are you trying to say? She said, this is not speculation. This is what this is. These are COVID camps, COVID concentration camps by a railroad. You've got to watch it. And then, of course, I had Matt Staver on for multiple minutes last night as well. There's so much going on, I can't even get to it all here on radio, but I am trying between TV and radio, but there's a lot over there at WVW-TV, and I don't want you to think that there aren't other things you need to know about, and particularly COVID concentration camp being built with millions and millions of dollars in California by the governor, Newsom, related to Nancy Pelosi, who some are saying He's going to run for president if Biden doesn't. Joining me now is Bill Federer. Bill, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, Brandon. Great to be with you.
Glad to have you with us. Today, December 7th, 2022. So today, many years ago, Pearl Harbor. You want to talk to us about that? And I got some PowerPoint, I guess, to go with it.
Sure. One of the first things I think is interesting is Franklin Roosevelt, in his campaign addresses, promised that the United States would not get into war. That was one of the reasons he got reelected. And just to read through some of these is enlightening. He said, I have said before, and I shall say it again and again and again, your boys are not going to be sent into any foreign wars. That was October 30th, 1940. And then FDR said, July 10th, 1940, I said, keep this nation from being drawn into war. We will not send our men to take part in European wars. And then another one. FDR gave a campaign promise, Young Democratic Clubs, April 20th, 1940. We are keeping out of the wars that are going on in Europe and in Asia. Our opponents are seeking to frighten the country by telling people that the present administration is deliberately drifting into war. You know better than that. And then October 26, 1939, New York Herald Tribune, FDR said, the United States of America, as I have said before, is neutral and does not intend to get involved in war. Another fireside chat, September 3rd, 1939. We seek to keep war from our firesides by keeping war from coming to the Americas. This nation will remain a neutral nation, as I've said many times, that I hate war. I hope the United States will keep out of this war. I give you reassurance that every effort of your government will be directed toward that end. Another, New York, Hyde Park, July 22nd, 1939, Franklin Roosevelt said, on the neutrality thing, I have here 45 newspaper editorials showing how widespread is the general approval to make the United States neutral and to help avert war. He said, again, addressing the third annual women's conference, October 13th, 1933, it is the policy of this government to avoid being drawn into wars between other nations. Another promise, August 31st, 1935, FDR, as a nation, we are overwhelmingly against engaging in war. The policy of government is avoidance of any entanglement which would lead us into conflict. And I know this is a little bit of redundancy, but I'm doing it just to give you an impression of this was FDR's campaign promises. He said February 29th, 1936, a definite step was taken toward enabling this country to maintain its neutrality and avoid being drawn into wars involving other nations. Another, I hear the music there, October 29th, 26th, 1939. We have heard orators beating their breasts against sending our boys and American mothers, boys of American mothers to fight in the battlefields of Europe. That I do not hesitate to label as one of the worst fakes in current history. It is a deliberate setting up of an imaginary boogeyman. The simple truth is that no person in this national administration has ever suggested the remotest possibility of sending the boys of American mothers to fight on the battlefields of Europe. That is why I label that argument a shameless and dishonest fake.
All right, we'll pick it up right there and find out when we come back. How did we get into it? Did they know about it in advance? right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. And by the way, while we are on the air here, we are also paying attention to, and there's my buddy. Let's go to that audio real quick, Logan. We are also, I'm muted to tell you what it is. We are paying attention to and recording the COVID vaccine efficacy and safety conference with Senator Johnson, Ron Johnson, and medical experts. There's my buddy James Thorpe. I'm going to work to get him on the radio TV tonight. Right behind him, you see Dale Bigtree. Dale Bigtree, I'm working with his PR people, texting with him even now, just testified and played a video that is very, very, very well done of the media, Fauci and the media telling you how if you get your shot, you won't catch COVID. If you get the shot, you won't infect others. There's my buddy, Dr. Peter McCullough, who's a regular here. Dr. Malone has been there. I've interviewed all these guys, and some of them I interview regularly, as you know. And here's Dr. Let me just dip in real quick for a second. Here's our buddy, Dr. James Thorpe, talking to Senator Ron Johnson.
To what could be causing this. Tell us briefly what you've seen in your population of the finest among us, the service members who've been forced to get the vaccine. Again, we saw the macro, but clinically, what are you seeing in your clinical experience?
I've seen 3 strokes, transient ischemic attacks, massive clot to the spleen and liver, spinal tumors, brain tumors, sarcoidosis, lupus, cognitive impairment, myocarditis, pericarditis, avascular necrosis of the hip requiring total hip replacement, without history of trauma or underlying coagulopathy, and I see a shocking suppression of the immune system that is pervasive in increased liver enzymes.
Now that is Dr. And Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Long. I've interviewed her as well several times. So I think we're pretty much everybody in that room we've interviewed at least once, and some of them regularly. We'll be getting some of them back on tonight. I'm in communication with some of them even now by text that are with him. So we are monitoring that. We are recording that in another one of our studios in control room down the hall. And so we're going to grab clips from this and bring that to you tonight. So there's a lot going on. We are reading stats now of what could be 1 billion dead, 1 billion dead from this COVID bioweapon. Karen Kingston is urging us to quit calling it a vaccine because we're playing into the propaganda. It is a bioweapon, she says. Joining me again is Bill Federer of AmericanMinute.com. Is it the American Minute or just American Minute, Bill?
American Minute.
AmericanMinute.com. AmericanMinute.com. All right, we're talking about Pearl Harbor today being December 7th. So FDR was saying, hey, we're not going to get drawn into this thing. But yet we did. Did they know in advance that Pearl Harbor was going to happen? Did they let it happen? Kind of like almost reminds me of like 9/11. Seems as though the signs were there, but they let it happen. What say you?
Well, it's interesting that literally dozens and dozens of times Franklin Roosevelt is making campaign speeches promising that the United States will not go into war. And then he actually gets into some of them where he says that Republicans are saying that I'm secretly preparing for war. They're nothing but a bunch of liars. And of course, he was secretly preparing for war. And so the dilemma and to give a benefit of the doubt, because historians will cover all the different angles, while America was in this isolationist attitude, you had Germany being taken over by the National Socialist Workers' Party in 1933. Italy and Ethiopia got pulled into the war in 1936. In 1937, Japan, Korea, China are pulled into the war. Austria, in 1938, the Anschluss. Remember Sound of Music when the Nazis come into Austria? And also 1938, that Czechoslovakia is pulled into the war. 1939 is a big year. USSR, United Kingdom, Poland, Albania, South Africa, Saudi Arabia, Samoa, Australia, New Zealand, Lithuania pulled into the war. 1940, Malta, France, Denmark, Belgium, Hungary, Greece, Norway, Romania, Slovakia, Netherlands, Luxembourg, Latvia, Morocco. And then 1941, more countries are being pulled into the war. And so you, those the that or apologists for FDR said that Winston Churchill was begging America to get involved because the Axis, which was the Nazis, it was Mussolini's fascist Italy and Imperial Japan, that literally all the major countries of the world were being pulled into the war. And if America waited too much longer to get involved, there may not be any of the rest of the world. And it would just be America against all of these forces on both sides. And so
that's when FDR flipped and started saying this. Let's go to this from your PowerPoint. Franklin D. Roosevelt told the Teamsters Union Convention September 11th. Interesting. 9/11. 1940, I stand with my party on the platform adopted in Chicago. We will not participate in foreign wars, and we will not send our army, naval, or air forces to fight in foreign lands outside the Americas, except in case of attack. Why is that an important quote, Bill?
Well, because it allowed him to break the campaign promises, basically. But nevertheless, on December 7th, 1941, America was attacked. Pearl Harbor had 350 Japanese aircraft descend, which sank five American battleships, three destroyers, 400 U.S. aircraft. Over 4,000 were killed or wounded. Investigations were done. Four-star Admiral H.E. Kimmel stated in a 1958 radio interview with Clarence Mannion. He was the dean of the Notre Dame Law School. He said, General Short and I were not given the information available in Washington and were not informed of the impending attack because it was feared that action in Hawaii might deter the Japanese from making the attack. Our president had repeatedly assured the American people that the United States would not enter into the war unless we were attacked. The Japanese attack on the fleet would put the United States in the war with the full support of the American public. And that's exactly what happened. And again, you think that, well, maybe it was justified because of the, if we had not gotten involved, but some of the other people look at it sort of like a famous quote from Lord Acton, and he was a British statesman. He said, official truth is not actual truth. Just sort of a blanket statement. Whenever you hear the government giving you official truth, that may or may not be the actual truth. It may be them wanting to condition the public, the opinion in a certain way. And so I throw that out just because it is history. And but we do are faced with the situation today that there may be government planners that may or may not be telling us the whole truth. Now, I do in my posts, I have a daily American Minute post, and the one today is on the attack at Pearl Harbor. One of the aspects I bring out is faith, and we did have a country that was in a majority Christian. Even in 1965, 93% of Americans identified as Christian. About 69% Protestant, 24% Catholic, and then 3% Jewish. So it was almost 100% Judeo-Christian. And so FDR gave out Gideon's New Testament and Book of Psalms to all the soldiers in World War II. He wrote the foreword, "As Commander-in-Chief, I take pleasure in commending the reading of the Bible to all who serve in the armed forces." I wrote a whole book called The Faith of FDR. People say, how could you do that? He was a Democrat and he was liberal. Well, yes, he was liberal back then, but both the left and the right have moved to the left since then. And so now several of FDR's statements are further on the right than the right is. I mean, what politician today would be willing to pass out Gideon's New Testaments and Book of Psalms to all the soldiers? You would have the people of other faiths, the Muslims, the Buddhists, the Hindus, the Baha'i, the Satanists, all say, well, you got to pass out our book too. But this was a Democrat in 1941. And then at that exact same week that Pearl Harbor took place, Roosevelt and his wife Eleanor were participating in a National Bible Week where the entire Bible was being read through that week over radio, NBC radio. And so on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, National Broadcasting Company, NBC, which was the leading national radio station in America, had this Bible reading started. And then Pearl Harbor happens, and Eleanor Roosevelt said, "The words I heard over the telephone were quite sufficient to tell me that finally the blow had fallen and we had been attacked, attacking the Philippines, Hawaii, San Francisco, Hawaii, the ocean between it. Our people had been killed, not suspecting there was any enemy." And she goes on. And then Eleanor Roosevelt says, "I think perhaps it is significant that we should be beginning Bible Week today. This is the first annual Bible Week, so designated by the Layman's National Council under the honorary chairmanship of Dr. Frank Kingdon. This committee believes that religious faith and knowledge of the Bible are essential to the preservation of our freedoms." So here you have Franklin Roosevelt, his wife Eleanor, are participating and endorsing the entire Bible being read over the NBC radio network. And then there's the famous speech that FDR gave before a joint session of Congress. December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by the naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. No matter how long it may take for us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. And then he goes on with the speech, and he does end it, "We will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God." And
so let me ask, Bill, what in your research showed you that they kind of knew this was coming, that this was used as the pretext to get us into war? We won't go to war unless we're attacked, and then we get attacked, and they kind of knew it was coming. People have written whole books on this, right?
Yeah, books and movies that the radar from the northwest side of Hawaii was either not activated, or the ships that normally did the reconnaissance were pulled from that area. That the telegram was sent to Washington, D.C., and supposedly some clerk left it in their file on their desk and didn't put it in somebody else's file that he should have been. But leading up to that was Japan was imperialistic, and they were taking over countries throughout the Pacific. They were aggressive. One of the stories that I bring out in my American Minutes is what the Japanese did in the Philippines, and it's called the Bataan Death March. And so in 1942, the Japanese invade Singapore, take 25,000 prisoners, and then they invade the Philippines. And Douglas MacArthur is told to leave, and he says, "I shall return." But meanwhile, they kill over 10,000 in the Bataan Death March. So the Japanese were brutal, and it was right that their imperial power was defeated.
Well, let's open the phone lines. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions. 1-800-347-9829. 1-800-347-9829. My guest, Bill Federer, AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. 1-800-347-9829. 1-800-347-9829. Your thoughts, your comments, your questions. And then be sure to stay tuned for Crosstalk at the top of the hour. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. All right, 1-800-347-9829, 1-800-347-9829. Let's go to line one, Brad from West Allis. Brad, thank you for calling in, Brad.
Hey, Brandon. First of all, the FDR administration knew what was coming. We had already broken their code. We knew when they left Japan, Japanese waters, the strike force, and we knew kind of where they were. And we should have had submarines on station. They could have at least sunk the carriers after the planes took off. And what you got the media nowadays actually saying things like, some say that we knew ahead of time. Well, that's that's a red flag for me. That means they know the truth too, and they want to soften it up. Those guys did not have to go through that meat grinder. They could have been warned and ready to go and ready to hit back, and everybody would have backed them up 100%. He didn't have to do that to them to get public support.
Wow. Yeah, and everything Brad's saying, Bill, is consistent with the stuff I've read and seen and paper clippings and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, it's sad. There certainly could have been another way to wake up the American public than to let such atrocity take place. And so we can't defend FDR on this one. I do want, he talked about the breaking of the code, and that was so important with the Battle of Midway. And so there were four Japanese aircraft carriers that were headed toward Midway. And it was the most important, June 4th of 1942. And so this is almost 2 years before D-Day. And Japanese attacked the Aleutian Islands in Alaska to try to get us to get distracted. We almost did, but we didn't. And then the battle, we sent some signals saying that they were short of water on the Midway, when they weren't. But, and then they listened to be able to see the Japanese repeating that, and then they were able to confirm that we had broken their code. And so the Japanese are heading toward Midway. We were going to ambush them, and the high-flying planes take off, but they can't find the Japanese until they see the wake of the aircraft carrier in the water. If you've ever flown an airplane over the ocean, you can see the trail of a ship for miles and miles afterwards. And so the first set of Americans coming in are what's called torpedo bombers, and they fly really close to the water, and then they release a torpedo really close, and they pull away while the torpedo keeps going straight. And so Lieutenant Commander John Waldron has their torpedo squadron leaving the U.S. carrier Hornet. He tells his men, my greatest hope is that we'll encounter a favorable tactical situation. And he says, even if there's only one plane to finally make the run, I want them to go in and get it. May God be with us. Well, they take off, they attack, and all of them are killed except one. He had to bail in the ocean. And it looked like it was fruitless, except that all the Japanese aircraft carriers, the four of them, had their planes take off, and they're buzzing all around like crazy. And then finally they land, and they have to be refueled and rearmed. Well, while they're being refueled and rearmed, you have dive bombers, and they are leaving the U.S. carrier's Enterprise in Yorktown, and Commander C. Wade McCluskey is on radio silence, and they spot it and break through the clouds, and they point their planes directly down, and they're screeching straight down. They release their dive bombs, their bombs turn plane, and then they make a U-turn as fast as they can to get out of the way. And they sink three, and then soon after that, a fourth of the Japanese aircraft carriers. Immediately, the whole war in the Pacific changes.
Wow.
From the Japanese
wow.
being on the offensive to them being on the defensive.
Let's go back to the phone lines real quick. They're lit up. Let's go to David, line three. David, thanks for calling in, David.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Hi, my grandfather was a missionary in China during World War II and prior, and the Japanese had taken over, and it was common knowledge over there that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor.
Huh.
My grandfather wrote to the president and told him about it, but of course nothing was done. People really wanted us in the war, and so that was a way to get us there, apparently.
Very interesting story. Thank you, David. David from Phoenix. Yeah, let's go.
Fascinating. I'd love to hear more about his family's missionary stories.
That's, absolutely. That's by the way, David, reach out to Bill on his website. He wants to hear more about your family and their missionary work there in China. Reach out to him and get his email and contact at AmericanMinute.com. You guys could communicate. Let's go to Josh from Waukesha. Josh, thanks for calling in. Line 4, Josh.
Hi, Mr. House and Mr. Federer. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
The topic today on the historic day we're having, and I was curious if you guys would consider Pearl Harbor to be a false flag attack that was actually coordinated by the U.S. in order to get us into the war, similar to many who think that 9/11 was a false flag attack coordinated against ourselves.
Quick answer, Bill, because I got to get one more in here.
Yeah, I put together a list of false flags all the way back to the Lusitania that got us into World War One, perhaps the sinking of the ship in the Havana Harbor. You have the Bay of Tonkin with LBJ. A lot of things that suspiciously look like they were allowed to happen so that we would be pushed into a war. And that gives some insight into people that have a global agenda today and how they would seemingly want us to get into a war with Russia.
Which is heating up in the last 24 hours, by the way. Patricia, yeah. Line 2. Patricia, thanks for calling in. Your last caller today. Go ahead, Patricia, please.
Hi, Brandon. I want to talk about, you were talking about the electric, okay, in the state that's going on. But here in South Africa, yeah, it's a lot of stuff also happening. They turn the electric off like 18, 16 hours a day. And I received a video in my language, and somebody was giving the people a warning. They want to turn the electric off between 4 days and two weeks. They want to turn it completely off.
They're in South Africa.
Yep. And I can give you also information from stuff that's going on in South Africa. The only problem is the last time I couldn't get your email.
Okay. Well, hold right there. Justin, give her my appropriate email. Make sure she has it all spelled right. Justin, Brannon, B-R-A-N-N-O-N, at worldviewweekend.com. You'll end up with two W's in a row when you spell out Worldview Weekend. Get her email if you would, please. Patricia, thank you for that. I'd like to hear more. Bill, his website is AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. Bill, thanks for being with us. Folks, thank you for being with us. Take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to worldviewweekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, BCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of worldviewweekend.com and is heard weekdays on BCY America.